What is up, everybody? Welcome back to I Am Outrage. Obviously, this is totally remote, in the most country of fashions that I have ever shot. I'm literally leaning side saddle here to record this video. As you can hear, the audio not quite where it normally is. The video very clearly not where it normally is because I am recording in Texas. That's where I got the cowboy hat, and the hat's so big that it's actually cut off by the upper portion of the video feed here. And I got this NASA shirt. Of course, Houston, we've got a problem, and it's very clear we've got a problem on this episode. I was planning on doing this as a live show with interaction, but of course, based on the connectivity of where I'm at, this cattle ranch apparently doesn't have Wi-Fi. And then, you know, being able to work with the audience members, I didn't figure that this was going to end up being a very solid video. So I thought, all right, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to do a local recording. I'm going to do it in a cowboy hat. And it's going to be fantastic. This is not going to be the length of a typical show. Next week, assuming everything goes according to plan, I've got Nick Urcolano on from Big Dog's Gotta Eat. Of course, everybody's a fan of him. So that's going to be a wild episode. And I will be back in my local home studio, so the quality is going to be A+ again, so you don't have to hear me talking through these AirPods, which now I even wonder why people wear AirPods at all when they feature on podcasts. These are terrible. They're not even close to the quality of an actual microphone. So guys, for the future, if you're watching this episode and you're going to go on a podcast and feature, do not wear AirPods. These are the lowest budget microphone next to, I don't know what's lower. When I was starting out doing rap, as you guys know that I did, you can actually take a pair of headphones and record into a pair of headphones through the ear hole because it is a transducer, just like a microphone in a lot of ways. So that's the cheapest, dirtiest, worst way you can record audio. But AirPods don't sound great. But again, I've gained about 50 pounds in the 4 days that I've been here. All we've been doing is eating barbecue every day. I went to, I think, the second biggest truck stop in Texas. Got barbecue there. Seems like an odd place to get barbecue, but it's much better than back at home. But again, was hoping to have done this episode live with everybody, but not this week. We'll get back to it next week. I'm going to wear this cowboy hat. I was only going to wear it for part of the episode, but since it looks just so good in the camera and it's actually diffusing the light over my head, I think we're going to roll with it. It's actually a benefit. I didn't think it was going to be. So what I have today, I got mailbag questions, but I figured, look, I want to do a live show with some of the questions that I received. So what I'm going to do is I got a bunch of trades that I want to look through, and then I've got a take about Ja'Marr Chase. And it's really weird timing because last week I released a video on YouTube talking about buy Ja'Marr Chase, buy T. Higgins, very clearly. I mean, they're still both buys, right? So we saw less of T than normal. Obviously, that helps after the year that he's put together so far. He's still been very good. Ja'Marr Chase having an odd year, maybe, unless you look at the data, and then all of a sudden there's a little more data support for this. Obviously, the string of games that we've seen him put together so far is strange, but we're going to look at some of his data and data points, and I'm going to make a comp for you guys, and it's going to rescue the whole thing. So it's weird to do these on back-to-back weeks, but the Ja'Marr Chase subject is just so big right now in Dynasty, and he was a buy last week. He's still a buy this week. Four consecutive weeks of underperforming, especially in a week where we didn't see T. Higgins. We've heard this narrative forever that T. Higgins needs Ja'Marr Chase to be successful. Well, very clearly, that's probably not the case because here was Ja'Marr all by himself versus the Baltimore secondary, one of the juiciest matchups of the year. And once again, we get another fart noise outing out of him, out of the player that was supposed to be the wide receiver one for a lot of people going into the year. But very clearly at this point, Justin Jefferson has separated himself from the pack. I tweeted about this the other day. I said we were going to see a tier break. I know other people have since gone public and said these statements, but it's very clear that the conversation needs to be had. And I will explain to you why there needs to be a tier break. I won't just say it. I'm going to show you like in data format because I looked this up and I really do want to support this take. So let's go ahead and start with the Ja'Marr Chase thing right now. This is going to be the most low-budget version of this show. This is the most cattle rancher version of this show you've ever seen. And I want to go into this Ja'Marr Chase thing because Jamar is immensely volatile. When we look at his production, I think that's one thing that we can agree on is that nobody thought when Jamar Chase was coming into the league that we were going to get this level of volatility out of this player, a guy with this level of draft capital, this player that had one of the greatest collegiate seasons of all time, comes into the league, best comparable to Odell Beckham Jr. So the sky was the expected limit for him. But since then, we really haven't seen it. And even out of his rookie season, we didn't see it then. And I've gotten so many social media responses from people because I've had a lot of Jamar Chase tweets of late because why not? The market was so hot. I might as well jump in. People telling me, well, it was his rookie season and forgive this and forgive that. It's like, well, no, wait a minute. Nobody believed that Jamar Chase's rookie season was to be treated as a standard rookie season. We were treating Jamar Chase like he was the best receiver in football. So you can throw out the rookie season thing altogether. Expectation was always significantly greater than how we would have treated any other wide receiver in their rookie season. But again, comps to Odell Beckham, best collegiate season of all time, potentially. And linking back up with Joe Burrow at the NFL level was obviously one of the other big sticking points. So we assumed we were going to get pure dominance from Jamar Chase week in and week out. But since day one, all we've seen from Jamar Chase are these up and down performances. And tweets like this that I have done have been driving people crazy since the beginning. Let me pull one up right now. Right here on the screen, as you guys can see, this tweet says, in 2021, Jamar Chase and T. Higgins had one regular season week where they were both top 20 or better. And that is an absolutely factual statement. And that tweet right there drives people crazy because they start to question, well, what's the issue here? Is it T. Higgins? They're saying T needs Jamar Chase. Well, look, very clearly from the beginning, day one, we knew that there was volatility. Okay, we witnessed it last season. Now we enter 2022 and that volatility has continued. And it's tweets like that that absolutely drive people crazy. And then let me follow that up with this next tweet. And I think I featured these on the last show, but this one was this year. In the regular season, Jamar Chase has just 1 week with back-to-back top 20 or better games in his NFL career. And through 5 weeks of the 2022 NFL season, that statement has not been dismissed. I mean, this is actually still holding up. This is, three consecutive or four consecutive games in a row under 13 fantasy points per game. It's not been great for Jamar Chase in 2022, despite the fact that everybody expected him to come in and absolutely shred the NFL at this point. And, too often we look at these guys that are volatile and just assume it's a week-to-week thing and that it's going to stabilize. But the social media response that I've gotten from these tweets is absolutely crazy. And oftentimes what we do get are the people that go, well, give me the ceiling player versus the floor, right? That is always the commentary. They're like, well, I would rather have Jamar Chase than player X because at least Jamar Chase has a ceiling and he's going to win you those weeks. But what is he doing to you on those off weeks? What is he doing to you literally every other week at this point? And, look, I get it. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to say that we would prefer the guy that has a 40-point ceiling versus the guy that's just routinely getting you 15 points. I think that makes a ton of sense. But my argument truly isn't against Jamar Chase, but the perception that people have had with him for the last two seasons. Because, again, people never expected him to be quite this volatile. And maybe it's time that Jamar Chase gets classified to another player that has a very similar ceiling to him. A player with his own disappearing acts week to week throughout his career, and a receiver who once upon a time was also viewed as the wide receiver one or the wide receiver two overall in Dynasty, because as my tweets last night alluded to, this gap between Justin Jefferson and Jamar Chase is opening up. I know everybody wants to, come out of the woodwork and go, well, I already saw the gap. I could do this. Well, I already saw the gap between these two players. Look, clearly Justin Jefferson has been incredibly solid with Kirk Cousins, even with Adam Thielen, who's a bit washed. There's nobody across from him to take away immense target share. There's nobody of his talent level. And I'm not saying T. Higgins is of Jamar Chase's talent level, but T. Higgins is a stud at the NFL level. And the sooner people accept that, the sooner you can buy into a player who's being valued underneath his ceiling. But again, I alluded to this gap opening up between these two players and that we need to talk about a tier break. And I think it's time that honestly people accepted it based on what we're seeing. And I broke this down a ton in my video last week. So if you guys haven't seen that one, go check it out. It's about T. Higgins. It's about Ja'Marr Chase and why they are a buy. But look, Chase is struggling with T. Higgins, without T. Higgins, and while linked to Joe Burrow. So for this audience, I wanted to give you guys some data points to look at this. So let's open one up right now. Let me minimize this tweet on the screen. Let's take a look at this right here. Bang, there it is. That is Ja'Marr Chase. He is the red line. Each one of those spikes represents a fantasy points per game outing. The blue line that's running horizontal represents the average fantasy points per game, of a wide receiver one in fantasy football through 2021 and up to the end of week five in 2022. So 16.3 fantasy points per game is the threshold to be a wide receiver one in fantasy over the last 2 years. And as you can see with Ja'Marr Chase's production, we have a multitude of games, a multitude of points where he is below the threshold of a wide receiver one. And if you start back, look, if you look at the bottom here, you can see the weeks and it goes to week 18. And then if you follow the last five markers, that is weeks one through five of the 2022 season. But look, you can see Ja'Marr Chase is above and below the wide receiver one threshold every single week for the most part. You can see in the middle there, weeks 8, 9, 10, which was a bye, 11, 12, 13, all well below 16.3 fantasy points per game, which was the wide receiver one mark. So you have to make a business decision with Ja'Marr Chase. If you're okay, I can't believe I'm wearing this cowboy hat. If you're okay with the player that Ja'Marr Chase is, the guy that can give you the ceiling of 40 fantasy points, of 50 fantasy points, knowing that on any given week, he could bounce back 1 week later and give you 13 fantasy points or 7 fantasy points, and you're going to live and die by the sword, then go for it. But with Ja'Marr Chase, what we're seeing here, everybody talks about the ceiling. Well, you can see the biggest spike here that happened in, I think, week 17 last season. He pushed towards 60 fantasy points. I believe he had 55.4 fantasy points, which is very clearly a monster week winner. I mean, that is as big as it gets. And again, these are regular season numbers, by the way. But you look at the other production around it. Where are these big games that you guys are asking for? Look, Ja'Marr Chase, week 7 in his rookie season, roughly 37-something fantasy points. Then you can see a couple games here, high 20s, mid 20s, pushing towards that 30-point threshold. But there's only so many of those games. There's quite a few games that don't really fall under that threshold. And when we look at Ja'Marr Chase's production, since week 1 of 2021, he has had 14 top 25 or worse performances. So at least 14 of the 22 games that Ja'Marr Chase has played so far in his NFL career have gone for outside the top 25 in fantasy finishes, which makes up roughly 64% of his fantasy football performances. And just 8 of his NFL career games thus far have been inside the top 25 or better. And of those 8 top 25 or better games, only 6 were actually good for top 10 fantasy finishes. So when we talk about a player who at one point in time was being valued at the cost of 3 first-round rookie picks at a minimum, it's really interesting that we have to keep in mind that this production has not been consistent. And that's fine. It's okay to have inconsistent production because, again, the player that I'm going to get to in a minute that I'm going to comp him to at one point was considered the wide receiver one, wide receiver two in Dynasty, was linked to a player with the capabilities of a guy like Joe Burrow, has the money throws, targets deep, has all the same tools, just at this point in his career and since the beginning of his career, has been far more elite. It's hard to say what the problem is here. We saw Ja'Marr Chase in week 4 when T. Higgins went off getting utilized in an odd fashion. He did not move into the slot as many of us had hoped. This is something we've seen from Justin Jefferson. Again, I mentioned some of this in my last video. Jefferson kicked into the slot versus Philadelphia at a rate of 54.5% because they wanted to get him away from Darius Slay. But that's the versatility of these slot-type receivers, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Elijah Moore, A.J. Brown. They have the skill set and capability to escape an outside battle and move him into the slot to become more creative. But in week four, when T. Higgins was going off, what did they do with Ja'Marr Chase? Well, they ran him at a near career low of 8% in the slot. So it's not like they tried to rescue him. They took advantage of the fact that they were double covering him. They kept using him as a stretch receiver. They kept running him deep in hopes that that was going to keep T. Higgins open, because on any given week, they're just going to play the matchup. And it's been proven through time based on his production. And I've had thoughts about this before, and I think when I give you this comp, it's going to make more sense. T. Higgins was drafted the year prior to Ja'Marr Chase, or to, I'm looking at the numbers here. He was drafted on day two. He was the first pick of day two. The Bengals had all night to think about this selection, and they added him. Ja'Marr Chase didn't even play college football in his final season. But when he was selected, it's hard for me to get this out of my head, that Ja'Marr Chase was selected not as a compliment in a negative way to T. Higgins, but as a can do everything type player, but also gave them that deep threat dynamic option. And we just continue to see him used in that fashion. We haven't seen him outside of a handful of games become that high volume guy. He's just the most explosive receiver in football. I mean, on any given day, he's probably the favorite in the NFL to have a monster out. And we continue to double down week after week after week, and all we do is get burned by it. And whether you want to call it a lack of creativity by the coaching staff, or you want to blame it on something else, we just have not seen it from him. And it becomes more and more disappointing. Again, Ja'Marr Chase is still a buy, but at some point we have to look at the idea that maybe Ja'Marr Chase is being used as a duo complement to T. Higgins, because T. Higgins' performance has been great. I understand in fantasy, we look at fantasy points per game, but that has nothing to do with the beliefs of a coaching staff. T. Higgins is routinely dominant when given opportunities. And yes, it takes more targets for him to get even close to an output of Ja'Marr Chase, but that's what makes Ja'Marr Chase so special. And that's why I have since comped him to this player right here. I'm going to bring this up on the screen right now. And the comp for me is Tyreek Hill. And this tweet right here drove people nuts. This was earlier in the year, and I pointed this out. With Patrick Mahomes in 2021, in 59% of Tyreek Hill's regular season games, which was 10, he was the wide receiver 26 or worse. In 8 of those same 10 games, he was the wide receiver 42 or worse. And I said, let that sink in the next time you cite his 17.4 fantasy points per game. That's exactly it right there, and I'm going to show you guys a graph between these two players in a minute. Look, Tyreek Hill's been volatile his whole career. Tyreek Hill has also finished as a top five, or a top, you know, a wide receiver one for 5 consecutive seasons, or 5 seasons throughout his NFL career, and he's working on number 6 while in Miami currently. He was considered the wide receiver one or the wide receiver two overall in Dynasty for the longest time. I don't think this is an unfair comp at all. Everything we love about Tyreek Hill is in the DNA of Ja'Marr Chase. It's just Ja'Marr Chase is a different style of receiver, built a little differently, can probably do a few different things that Tyreek doesn't do. But they are the same player when it comes to performance on the field. And in Dynasty, that has been validated through time, that Dynasty owners will value them very similarly. It's been proven that way. But again, we're seeing this gap between Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase sort of break out. So let me bring up the graph between these two players. So I went with a bar graph this time. But as you can see, the blue, once again, represents a wide receiver one over the last 2 years in the regular season. The purple, in this case, is Tyreek Hill. And the red is Ja'Marr Chase. With you know, Tyreek Hill, there are some there are some lows here. You know, you can see it week to week. With Ja'Marr Chase, we see a little bit more of a stable floor. I mean, the floor isn't necessarily great, but you're getting that 11, 12 fantasy point performance out of him, where Tyreek Hill has disappeared more significantly over time. You know, look at week 2 last season, week 3, week 9, week 13, week 16, week 18. At week 3 this season, obviously a little different. But again, both of these guys have played the same number of games since last season, and you can just see the extreme levels of volatility, the big spikes. Tyreek Hill has a couple of 40-point games. Tyreek Hill has pushed into the 30-point range pretty often. But I think it is the closest comp for Ja'Marr Chase at this point in his career, and we are 22 games into his NFL career, and I think we now know a lot more conclusively what player this might be, short of Cincinnati having some serious philosophy changes. You know, going back to his rookie season, 7.5 targets per game. Thus far this season, we've seen it right around 11.5. So the target share has gone up, but the disappearing acts have not disappeared. They've just been a little more volatile. Again, you look at the end of this graph right here, weeks 2, 3, 4, and 5, Ja'Marr Chase, you know, the most recent performances, not great, while Tyreek Hill remains sort of volatile himself. But again, I want to remind people that with Tyreek Hill, five wide receiver one finishes so far in his NFL career, on pace for number 6 this year. You know, and we look at his target share, just like Ja'Marr Chase's target share. Even at a 27% target share with Ja'Marr Chase, that isn't a problem, despite that only being roughly a top 15, 16 wide receiver number, because that's right around where Tyreek Hill has always been with Patrick Mahomes, and it has not slowed Tyreek Hill down one bit, because that ability after the catch, that deep threat. So again, would we like to see Ja'Marr Chase at a 30% target share? Yeah, of course we would like to see that. But the problem is that T. Higgins is a talented player. Clearly, T. Higgins is great. You can call him a beta alpha. You can call him a wide receiver too. I don't care what you want to call him. I call him a talented player. I call him a guy that's underpriced. I call him a guy that's a wide receiver one potentially on any given week, something that Ja'Marr Chase is yet to really show consistently. Again, by the graphs, has not shown consistently. But T. Higgins is always going to float in that 18% to 24% target share range. He's not going anywhere. It's very possible that T. Higgins gets extended in this offense and they go back and forth till the end of time. It's not a problem. Again, if you own Ja'Marr Chase, you know the volatility is real. You knew the volatility was real last year. T. Higgins has a very stable floor. What's going to happen most likely is when people really do finally accept this fact, I think T. Higgins rises a little more, knowing that the Cincinnati Bengals are always producing some form of a dominant receiver from week to week. It's just, who's it going to be this week? Well, T. Higgins needs to necessarily go up in value too. I think he is absolutely a top 10 dynasty wide receiver. I think he's probably higher than that. But I've seen him as low as 13. I've seen him as low as 11. We've seen him slide a little bit further than that. Some of these injuries are keeping his value in the right place. But again, guys, Ja'Marr Chase, definite tier break with Justin Jefferson. I think guys like Cooper Kupp, I think guys like Stephon Diggs, both roughly age 29 or older. I think it's a tougher conversation than when we're talking about two players that aren't even 24 years old yet. I think if Kupp was 26, 27, I think that if Stephon Diggs is 26, 27, it'd be very clear that we would have a much tighter bunch up at the top. I always struggle to take guys of this age group and classify them as high value players in Dynasty. But again, guys like, you know, Tim Brown, guys like Jerry Rice, guys like Marvin Harrison, guys like Larry Fitzgerald, all these players play deep into their careers, age 35, age 36. Who's to say that these players don't do the same thing? I mean, Cooper Kupp running out of the slot. Stephon Diggs has been absolutely phenomenal throughout his career so far. So it's hard to say when the wheels fall off for these players. Could be age 32, could be age 33. But if we're using the age apex in fantasy football, if we're looking at the data conclusively, it's hard to argue that these two guys are not only past that prime, but also treading into a territory that's unknown. So it's okay to still be bullish on these players, knowing that they are still being dominant at a point in their career that every other guy before them has fallen off. So I understand if they're buys for you in Dynasty, I think their value is a lot lower. If I was a contender, they're probably guys that I would also want to reach for, obviously, because I think people are going to be concerned that, again, those wheels might fall off eventually. But data has shown that there are plenty of players that have played way past the age apex, which at the wide receiver position is pushing that age, you know, 27, 28, 29 range. So they're very clearly past the peak of it, but still performing at an absolutely elite level. So guys, I am not out on Ja'Marr Chase. I still think that he is the second best wide receiver in Dynasty. I think that gap has closed. I think we can look at guys like CeeDee Lamb. I think we can look at guys like AJ Brown. We can start to have a real conversation about them. But when we talk about ceilings, there is very few, if possibly no other players besides Tyreek Hill in the NFL that can touch Ja'Marr Chase on a game-to-game basis when everything goes at its absolute best. All right. So I wanted to break down a couple of trades that were submitted to me by people. So let's go through a couple of these right now. This one right here is an interesting one. It has James Cook in it. I just wrote an article on Patreon, patreon.com/I'm Outrage. Broke down a couple of these rookie running backs that are behind these incumbent veterans. James Cook is a name that I talked about. But in this deal, we've got James Cook, we've got Warren on Pittsburgh, and we've got a 2023 second-round pick in the future for Terry McLaurin, Van Jefferson, and a 2023 fourth-round pick. I like McLaurin, love the air yards, but McLaurin has just never fired. It's just never worked out for him. So at this point, when I'm looking at these two offers, if I'm going to get a future 2023 second round pick, if I'm going to get Warren behind Najee Harris, who some people have sort of fallen out of favoritism with, and James Cook, who, by the way, Devin Singletary likely not getting re-signed to Buffalo, a team that is going to be in the bottom seven in expected cap space in 2023, could be his season next year potentially. So I think it's a difficult situation here for me to want to go with Terry McLaurin, even though I do also like Van Jefferson, but it's been a struggle for Allen Robinson as the number two in this offense. I think if you're in the Rams offense and your name is not Cooper Kupp, you're probably somebody that I don't want to own at this point. So I'm going to take the James Cook side here. Comes with a lot of depth at the running back position. Plus you get a shot at a second round pick in 2023. Next trade offer on the screen. Boy, there's a lot here. So we've got Keenan Allen, J.K. Dobbins, and a 2024 second-round pick. Got Javonte Williams. We've got Matt Corral, 2023 fourth, 2024 first, and a 2024 third. Coughed up basically his first, his third, and his fourth, plus Javonte and Matt Corral to get Keenan Dobbins and a future second. The unfortunate nature of this Javonte Williams injury is that we might not see him at full health for 18 months. I mean, it might essentially be 2 years before we get the real version of Javonte Williams back on an NFL field. At that point, he's much older. Corral, to me, is a total throw-in here, despite the situation going on with the Panthers. I don't know that there's an immense amount of faith in him. The future 2024 first, of course, is going to be devalued. Anytime you're 2 years out on rookie picks, they're not going to get the value that they necessarily deserve. But going back to this other side of the deal, Keenan Allen is one of these players who, exactly like these aged veterans, like a Larry Fitzgerald, like a, you know, these players that play out of the slot, it does extend their career. We've seen Keenan Allen playing out of the slot a majority of his career. Of course, J.K. Dobbins has looked better in an explosive offense and a 2024 second. Give me the healthier player right now. This Denver offense hasn't looked great either. We don't know if they continue to ramrod this backfield as a committee in the future, even when Javonte comes back. So I am going to take the Keenan Allen side of this, though I think some people may like that they're going to get Williams in a future first. I just want the production today, and it also comes with the added value that there is the youth to it, the future pick and Dobbins, both players that you can lean into in the long term. Now, number three. So somebody gave up a 2023 first for Michael Thomas, Isaiah Pacheco, and a 2023 third. I guess this depends on who you are. If you're a contender and you don't love Clyde Edwards, I can see the allure of Isaiah Pacheco. I don't think that Pacheco is the long-term answer. And I'm not saying that as a talent argument or anything like that. It's just when you look at the history of these players, you look at the usage thus far between McKinnon and Clyde Edwards, and then Pacheco being the third or potentially fourth wheel at times in this offense, they really haven't given him a shot yet, which leads me to believe that, you know, either it's going to happen a lot later in the year or Andy Reid is just being stubborn. But clearly Pacheco has a lot of juice and probably should be given opportunity. Michael Thomas, a player that I had banged the table for earlier in the year. A few injuries this year have slowed him down. Chris Olave looks like the guy, but Michael Thomas has been incredibly durable throughout his career. So if I'm a contender, I can see the allure of the Thomas Pacheco 2023 third round pick. But if I'm a rebuild team, I would probably just take that future first round pick because, again, don't know what happens with Pacheco. Michael Thomas is already getting much older. Don't know what the future is for him. Olave is very clearly the future of this offense. A lot of moving parts here. So again, I like the Pacheco side if I'm a contender. I like the pick side if I'm a team that's on a rebuild. Let's see here. What do we got left? I think we have another one down here. Okay, another one with Pacheco. Pacheco, hot item apparently on this show today. So we've got Isaiah Pacheco, a 2023 second and a 2023 third for Tyler Conklin and Devin Singletary. It depends. If you're in season right now, I can see the allure of the Singletary side. Again, in 2022, probably lean into the Singletary side of this deal. If I'm a rebuilding team and I want to take a dart throw on Pacheco, then I like the side that's got the picks. Again, Devin Singletary is going to be a free agent this year. There is no guarantee that he re-signs with Buffalo. I don't think he's necessarily shown enough to go get a premier contract outside of Buffalo. So he may end up in some form of a timeshare somewhere else, maybe splitting work with a passing down back. Again, imagine a Chargers type offense or something like that. Again, it's still a great offense to be a part of, and maybe in that case it gives him a lot more upside. But of course, I just named the best potential landing spot. If he goes to anywhere worse than that, I think he loses value. If you're assuming he comes back to Buffalo, I think that can be a dangerous proposition. What's the argument for the Jets? Are there too many mouths to feed? You know, we've got Corey Davis, you know, we've got Garrett Wilson, we've got Elijah Moore. Very clearly, they're targeting Breece Hall out of the backfield. We've got Michael Carter. So the volatility of the tight end position surrounding that as well. So again, if I'm a team that's competing this year, give me the Singletary side, and I'm going to cross my fingers that either Singletary gets re-signed and pushes James Cook out of the way, or he gets a great landing spot in 2023. If I'm a rebuilding team that's probably not competing, I'll take the picks and Pacheco and hope for the best. We got one more deal right here to break down. This one's kind of interesting. George Pickens in a 2023 second or Debo Samuel in a 2023 third. Debo's already proved himself. Debo is, I believe, just 27 years old currently. But we're finally seeing that breakout from George Pickens that we had hoped to see. So with the 2023 second in there versus the 2023 third, I'm not going to get too hung up about the difference of those two players. I think that, you know, the smart money is probably going with Debo Samuel in this case, because Debo Samuel has now proved himself, not just last year, but into this year. He's got an incredible ceiling. He's got a great usage type. We don't know what he's going to be like with, you know, Trey Lance potentially when he comes back, or if he comes back, or to whatever health degree that is. But we're seeing Debo Samuel once again utilized in an alpha type role, top 10 target share, getting the rushing opportunity, being utilized all over the field, juke rate still way up there, fantasy points per route run still way up there. So if I wanted to go with the guarantee, I would go with Debo Samuel. I don't know what the true outlook is for a guy like George Pickens. Again, look what we just talked about with a guy like Ja'Marr Chase. Ja'Marr Chase was supposed to be a win-all player no matter the matchup. He was an all-terrain vehicle. Well, he's very clearly proved that he's not an amphibious whatever vehicle. He's very clearly a sports car, and you know, depending on the speed limit of the road, that's what you're going to get out of him. So we don't know what the ceiling is for George Pickens, but obviously the quarterback change has helped immensely. Debo Samuel in a very volatile role, so I understand if you're afraid of Debo getting hurt, which he has done a lot throughout his career, you would want to go with the George Pickens side. I just like the guarantee of Debo. I think that Debo's still young enough to continue to produce for a couple of years in this offense. So give me the guarantee there, guys. All right, well, that's going to conclude this I'm Outraged episode. I can't believe we got 30 minutes out of this episode. I did not think it was going to go this long. Audio quality, video quality, everything is going to be back on par next week when I am back home in the studio recording again. I'm expecting Nick Ercolano to be there. Guys, thank you for tuning in. I apologize for this not being live, but I just could not risk the worst show of all time due to flawed connectivity issues. The background, I've got sconce lighting behind me. It's not great. It's not the best situation I've ever had. So anyways, I'll see you guys next week, and we'll do a nice, full, robust show as you are used to. See you then.